Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top of Daf Mem Beis. You will notice a house shape with the number 6. We're in the middle of a series of case analysis of Tevios and Kviros. Party 1 is attempting to collect from Party 2. Party 2 responds with a statement of, let's say, at least disagreement or denial. The Gemara. Hahu diomrele lechavrei. Man says to his friend, Havli mea zuzi demasikna boch vaho shtara. I want you to give me the 100 zuz, or if you prefer, instead of saying zuz, which is a type of currency, we can say $100 that I am collecting from you, that you owe me, and here is the shtar, here is the document indicating thusly. Omar Le, the one being collected from, responds, Poratich, I paid you back. Omar Le, the Tovea, the collector, says, Hano Sitroi Ninu, the money that you gave me, that was for a separate debt, a different debt. Sitroi literally means aside. In other words, some other debt that was on the side, not the debt that's represented in this shtar. Omar Rav Nachman, ruling on this case, says, Isra Shtora. The shtar that is being used to collect here has been weakened. In other words, the collector admits that he received money, and it's not within his power to simply deny that the payment was for that which is contained in this shtar, and simply claim it was a istroi ninu, a side payment for a second loan. Rav Papa Omar lo isra shtara. Rav Papa says, no, the shtar remains in full strength. The Gemara asks, the question here lasts a few lines. Ulo Rav Papa, mai shno meahu di Omar le lechavrei. What is different about the case we saw from this case where one says to his friend, Havli meazuzi de masikna boch the hashtara, give me the 100 zuz that I am collecting from you, that you owe me, and here is the shtar, Amale, and the nitba, the one being collected from, says, Lav aturi yahavis li v'osis v'isis v'sevis amaschosa v'kabila zuzach. The money that you gave me, was it not for an investment in oxen, in meat, turi, or oxen? The money that you gave me wasn't a loan. It was a payment in anticipation or a payment for an investment in meat. And in fact, you came and sat by the till of the butcher shop and sold the meat, and you received the expected profits, i.e. the payment for your investment. The Omar lay, and the Tovea said, Hano Sitroi Ninu. Those monies were on a different occasion. The shtar that I am showing you is for a loan that I gave you and have not yet received payment for it. The Omar Rav Papa, and here we want to emphasize, and we dashed underline his name, Rav Papa himself says, Isra Shtora. The shtar, in fact, is weakened. And yet before, in a similar sounding situation, Rav Papa enabled the Toveya, the one collecting, to make the claim of Sitroi Ninu. And here, not so. The Gemara answers, Hossam, in the case of the butcher meat investment, Kevon de Ka'omar, since the Nitva responded in detail and said, Aturi Yavisli, the money that you gave me was not a loan, it was for the purchase of oxen, Umituri Shaklis, and you got your payment back from the sale of the meat of those oxen, Isra Shtara, because of that, the shtar that the Toveya, the collector, is trying to use to collect, has been weakened. Hacha, in the case where we saw the house with the number 6 featured, Amor Sitroi Ninu. You don't have that, let's say, that detail level response on the part of the Nitba. And therefore, there is room for the Toveya to claim to respond to the Nitba who claimed, I already paid you. No, that was for a separate loan, but the shtar that I have is still in power. My Havi Allah. Now the Gemara wants to know, how shall we rule? Rav Papi Omar Lo Isra Shtara, in the case that we featured at number 6 above, Rav Papi rules like Rav Papa, that the shtar remains intact, and he's able to collect the loan. And Rav Sheshes Breid Ravidi Omar Isra Shtara, he rules like Rav Nachman. Vehilchisa Isra Shtara. And the Gemara itself takes the standpoint that since the Toveya admitted receiving the money, but simply claimed that the money that he received was for a separate loan, nevertheless, the shtar that he's trying to use now to collect is weakened. Vahani mili, and when is it that we say that the shtar is weakened? De pare be'api sadi velo idkar le shtora. When the payment was made in front of witnesses, and there was no mention made of, as Rashi says, "Velo itkar leishtor shiitol hashtar miyodo," that he should take back the shtar. Just to go over this last point a little more accurately, we say that the ruling of isra shtar, that the shtar is weakened, that's when the payback was made in front of witnesses, and the borrower simply didn't remember to request his shtar, his bill of loan in return. He simply forgot to request the loan document in return. Avol pare bein didei ledidei. If, however, the payback was in private, the borrower paying the money back to the lender without witnesses, migu diyochol lemeimar lo hoyu dvorim meolam, since the Toveya could have claimed, never happened, you never paid me back whatsoever, yochol nami lemeimar sitroi ninu. He therefore is able to say that, yes, I did receive the money, but that was for a separate account. You still owe me the money. Uchida avimi brei derabi avo. Now here, this is a very terse comment. Rashi himself says that the case of Avimi is mentioned in Maseches Ksubis, where a similar incident happened, and that was the ruling. Where the payback was done in private, then we will give believability to the Toveya when he says Sitroi Ninu, because he had the possibility of claiming Lo Hayu Dvarei Me'olam, and he would have been believed with that. Another case, number 7. Hahu, the Omar Le Lechavre, a borrower said to a lender, Mehemnis Li, Koemas de Amris Li Lo Parano. I grant you believability that whenever you will say that I have not paid you back, then that is the final word. And I will be chayev to you. I will be obligated to pay you. Ozal pare beapisadi. The love, the borrower, went and paid back the loan in front of witnesses. Abaye v'rova d'amri travayu ha hemne. Abaye and Rova, they say, even so, the borrower granted believability to the lender. So that if the lender will say, I didn't get my money, that's the final word. Maskif lo Rav Papa. Rav Papa disagrees and says, Nehi dehemne tfei nafshei. Granted that the borrower imparted greater believability to the lender than himself. In other words, lender will be more believed than myself. However, tfei misadi mihemne. But did the borrower grant more believability to the lender than witnesses? Certainly not. Case number 8. Hahu di Amar Le Lechavre. A borrower said to a lender, Mehemnis Li Kebei Trei Kol Amos de Amris Lo Parano. You have the believability of two. When we speak of two, that generally has a connotation of two witnesses. So he says, you have the believability of two whenever you will say that I have not paid you back. Ozal pare vape tlosa. The borrower went ahead and paid the loan back to the lender in the presence of three. Omar Rav Papa, kebei trei hemne, kebei tlosa lo hemne. Rav Papa says that the lender, the borrower will not have to pay anymore, because all the borrower said is that the lender has the believability of two, not three. And when he went ahead and paid back in the presence of three, that has greater strength. Omar le Rav Huna raid Rav Yoshua le Rav Papa. Rav Huna disagrees with Rav Papa and says that you who are making a distinction based on the numbers of people, that has value, that has significance in certain areas of halacha, but not when it comes to testimony. And here we're talking about the ability to testify whether or not the loan has been paid. So Rav Huna says, Enor di Amri Rabbonon di Azlinon Bosar Rovdeos. Under what circumstances do the rabbis say that the greater number of opinions will set the outcome, will establish the outcome? And in this case, under what circumstances would we go with the ruling of the three, or the comment of the three over two? Hani mili linyan umdana. That's when it comes to matters of evaluation, of assessment. The kama dinafishi bikitve. The more people you'll find, the more people that are there, the more expertise you will have on the matter. Avalinyan edus. However, when it comes to a matter of testimony, of simply testifying to an event, whether it did or did not take place, mea katre utre kamea. Two are like 100, and 100 are like two, and therefore there is no reason for us to believe the three any more than the lender who was given the believability of two. Lishno Achrina, another version of this, That's why we also have this squiggle underline with a bays, eight bays. You have the believability like that of two. As whenever you say lo parano, that I have not paid you back. Also pari bape tlosa. He went ahead and paid back in front of three. Omar of Papa, kebe tre hemne, kebe tlosa lo hemne. Rav Papa says that the borrower gave believability to the lender like that of two, not like that of three. Maskif lo Rav Huna pre Rav Yeshua. Tre kemea omea katre. Two are no less than 100, and 100 are no different than two. So that the distinction you're making in numbers is unfounded. Ve'i omar le, if the love had said kebe tlosa, if the borrower had said to the lender, I'm granting you believability like that of three. V'yozo pare bape be'ar bo'o. And the lova then goes and pays back in front of four. Kevin de nochis ledeos, nochis ledeos. So, in a case like this, even Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, who said that we don't make distinctions in numbers, that's when the original number referred to as I'm giving you believability of two. Giving believability of two is tantamount to saying I'm giving you the strength of formal edus, formal testimony. Formal testimony exists, is established when you have two witnesses. There's no difference between two witnesses and 100 witnesses when it comes to testimony. However, if the borrower didn't say two, but rather he says, I'm giving you the believability of three, then it shows that he's interested in numbers. He's not interested in simply imparting to the lender the strength of legal testimony, but rather he's imparting to the lender the strength of three opinions. In other words, the numbers are important. And therefore, when the borrower pays back in front of four, well, four is greater than three. Ein nishboyen al tainis cherishoite v'koton, v'ein mashbien es hakoton. An oath, we saw in the Mishnah, is not established, is not generated by the claim made by a deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor, nor do we impose a shvua on a katan. My taima, why? What is the source for this? Why is that? Omar kra, the pasuk says ki tein ish el re'ehu kesef o kelim lishmor. When an ish, when an adult gives something to so-and-so, the ein nesinas koton klum. The pasuk describes someone giving, an adult giving something to someone to watch. And then he, the one who gave the item, puts in a claim. Give it back to me. That's a taina. And then the shomer would respond. If he denies, he'll have to swear. But what generates the oath of the shomer? It is the giving to him by an adult, by an ish. And we infer when a man gives something, when an adult gives something, v'ein nesinas koton klum. But when in contrast to if a minor would give something to be watched, that would not generate an oath on the part of the shomer. Avol, Nishboyan lekoton ulehekdish. The Mishnah went on to say, but one does swear to a minor or to Hekdish. Hekdish is the Beis HaMikdash, is the Holy Temple fund. The Gemara asks, how can the Mishnah say that you will swear to a katan when the Ho'amris Reisha Einishboten Einishboyin Altainas Cheirishoyte V'katan, that one does not swear when a claim is made by one of these individuals, including the minor. As you can see, we've introduced a new marking scheme, a trapezoid or volcano shape, which as you go ahead in the Gemara, if you just scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll see many of these appearing in alternating directions. On the side of the Gemara, so we have a nosei, a topic heading, followed by a structural note, which reads, Mosai Amrinon Tien Nishboyen Lokoton. Under what circumstances do we say that we don't swear to the koton? Hesper Machloikis Rebelozer Ben Yaakov V'Chachomim. We will see in our Gemara the explanation to a difference of opinion, a controversy between Rebelozer and the Chachomim Hamofia Bebraisa Shemuva BeGemara that appears in a Braisa that we will see brought in the Gemara. As we pointed out, the trapezoid, which appears in alternating directions, is explained under the Mivneh, the structural note. This is a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take of the Gemara. The narrow part facing up represents Kusho's questions. The inverted is the inverted trapezoid Tshuvos, responses. We've already raised the question, how can, on the one hand, the Mishnah say that we swear to a katan, which would indicate the katan is making a claim, when the Reisha said, Ein nishboin al tainis cherishet of a katan. Omar Rav, you'll notice that we have a bow tie shape around Rav, and an indication that this is number one. On number on the Omid Beis, we will see Shmuel on the lower part of the narrow lines of Omid Beis. We will see a second approach. So Rav says, "Bebo betainus oviv." That which the Mishnah says, "Nishboyin the cotton." It's where the katan is coming with a claim on the part of his father. What does that mean? So we look at the Rashi second line from the bottom. Katan is saying, my father gave to you. My father lent you money, he gave you an item to watch. So when the Pasuk itself says, Ki ten ish el re'eyu kesef o kelim lishmor, the ish in this case is the Katan's father, the adult, did the giving over here. And the Katan is coming to claim back the item that from this person that the Katan's father had given. The Gemara continues. The explanation of Rav, where the Mishnah says, you will swear to a katan, this is Reb Elozer ben Yaakov he. This is in accordance with Reb Elozer ben Yaakov, the Sanya Reb Elozer ben Yaakov Oimer, Pa'omim Shodom Nishba'al Tainas Atzmo. At times, a person swears based on his own claim. Ketzad, Omar lo. Mono lo vicho biyodi vechaltiv pras. Where someone comes forth and says, you know, I owe to your father, I had owed him $100, and I've paid him 50. Hareze nishba. Well, you know, you said that you still owe him part of the original amount. He swears, he has to swear, v'zeo shenishbal tainis atzmo. This is an example of someone swearing based on his own claim. V'chachomim omrim eino elo kemeshiv aveda upoter. This person is no less than someone who returns a lost article. And when someone returns a lost article to the owner, there is no oath that's imposed. Even though the owner might claim that he lost two of those items and only one of them is being restored, we know that when someone is kind enough to do the act of Hashavas Aveda, we don't impose upon him an oath. The Gemara asks, "For Rabbi Lozer ben Yankiv Lesle Meshiv Aveda Potter?" We didn't explain enough when the Chachomim said that the case that the Reisha reported, where someone comes on his own volition and says, "You know, I borrowed $100 from your father, and I've already paid him back 50. I still owe him another 50." The Chachomim, in the source we just read, said that that's tantamount to restoring a lost item to someone. In other words, the son of the lender didn't put in any claim. He, as far as we can see, didn't know anything about his father's dealings to begin with. Someone out of the blue comes and volunteers this information. So the Chachamim described him as a Meshiv Aveda, as no different than someone restoring a lost article. There's no oath. And hence, the Gemara asks, now, for Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv, Lesle Meshiv Aveda Potter, does Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv not agree with that principle, that when you come to restore a lost article, we're only too thankful to you for doing that fine gesture? Of course we don't impose an oath on you. Likewise, when someone says, "I had owed your father $100, but I paid him 50 of them, I still owe another 50, that's the same thing. Why would Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv impose an oath? Omar Rav. So Rav explains, B'shetoanoi Koton. The case that Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv says that he has to swear is not as if someone came out of the blue volunteering the information, but rather a minor had said, "You know, you owe my father $100. And the fellow responded, "Well, I paid him already 50. The Gemara asks, "Katan, are you saying that the one who made the claim in that source is a katan?" But it was already stated that if it's a cotton that makes a claim, that doesn't generate an oath. And yet Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv says that he must swear. And if you're saying that a cotton is the one making the claim, you wouldn't be swearing to his claim. The Gemara responds, "Le'olam gadol." The one who made the claim really was an adult, and that's why an oath is taken when you respond and say, "I only owe half." The Amai Koru Le Koton, why does Rav refer to the adult making the claim as a minor? The Legabi Mila Davua Koton Hu. Because with regard to his father's dealings, he is ignorant. He doesn't really know his father's dealings. So that there is the basis for the oath is that an adult is making the claim. The use of the term katan on the part of Rav is because of his level of knowledge of his father's dealings. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi, if this is the explanation to Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv in the source, Tainus Atzmo, Tainus Achirim Hi. You can use an arrow, you can use the arrow we have on the side of the Gemara text. You can see where this question is coming from. In the source, Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv had said that at times people will swear based on their own claim. But here it's not his own claim. Here you have an adult son of some man making a claim. And therefore, it's not Tainus Atzmus own claim, it's someone else making the claim, and you are responding with a partial admission, and hence the need for an oath. Why then in the source does it say that you're swearing based on your own testimony, your own claim? The Gemara answers, Tainus Achirim V'Hiduas Atzmo. It's in fact an outsider making the claim, and as far as Atzmo is concerned, your own means it's your own admission. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. Well, if that's the explanation of the source, Kulu Nami Tainus Achirim V'Hiduas Atzmo, Ninhu, all claims that lead to an oath involve someone else making the claim and you offering partial admission. Why then does the source use the term at times a person is nishba al tainus atzmo? This is if the atzmo is in fact your response, your admission, so it's all the time. That's common, common play. In other words, it's not something that that would warrant being referred to as at times. So now the Gemara goes back to the original explanation, and Rashi adds this on the second line from the top. We're going back to what we said originally. The one making the claim here, in fact, is a minor. In order to appreciate this explanation fully, we go into the Rashi, second line from the top. We'll see Rabo's principle explained in the Gemara. We have also a long marking in the accompanying the Gemara text showing that it's one long point. It's a koton that is making the claim that so-and-so, that you owe my father, owed my father money. Since in other cases, in other halachas, the taina of a koton lacks, the taina means the claim of a koton lacks significance. Since the pasuk itself says that it's only when an ish, when an adult gives something to be watched, and he, the adult, makes the claim. So, kori lehocha tainus atzmoi. Since the koton is so insignificant, even though he is making the claim, it's referred to in the source as you making the claim. Kilu, as if to suggest this outsider minor is non-existent. Miu hocha tainahi. However, here, the katan represents a real taina, a real claim. Da'iko nesinas ish, because we have a fulfillment of the pasuk which said ki yitein ish ereu kesef kelim. There is the giving of an adult. The mikoyach nesinas saav hi ba'a. It's because the father originally gave the item to be watched. That is the source of the current claim. V'hainu dekomar pe'omim, and that's why in the source the word pe'omim was used, meaning it's a, we'll call it an unusual case. V'chiteimo rabbonan amai pligi ole, you'll ask then, well, if that's what's happening, why do the rabbonan disagree? So the Gemara answers, but the rabbo kamifli, it's rabbo's din or rabbo's principle that is the point of machlokus, and that we haven't seen yet. So now we go on in the Gemara. A minor is making the claim that my father gave you something to watch, and now I want it back. What is Rabbo's principle? Diyama Rabbo, mipnei ma omro Torah. Why does the Torah say moide mixes a tiny yeshova? That when one responds with a partial admission, the Torah imposes an oath on him to verify, to substantiate that claim or that admission. The explanation is Chazoka einod emeis ponov b'fnei bal chovo. There's an assumed status on people that they would not be so brazen as to totally deny something that they owe when they owe it. The high, and we suspect that this guy who's modeh b'mitzas, who partially admits, he also partially denies, that this guy, Bekuli boy delichbury, he would like to deny everything. The high delo kafre, and that which he doesn't do so, mishum dieno meiz ponov b'fnei bal chovo. He wouldn't be so bold as to deny it completely. Ubekule boy de lo delay. And in truth, he really should admit owing the total amount. Vahai de lo o delay. And so why is he not admitting the total amount? Ishtamute de komishtamit mine. He is practicing a delay tactic. Mishtamute literally means he's trying to escape, but it's to get away from his claim right now. The individual that owes the item being claimed wants to pull off a delay tactic. Sovar figuring ad havi lizuzi uparanale, until I get the money with which to pay back the loan, so I want to push off the lender from trying to collect. For Achmona Omar, and the Torah says, Rami Shvua Iluya, we place an oath upon such an individual, ki hechi de lodi le bekulei, so as to cause him, that if he is lying, to admit the total amount. So, simply put, according to Rabbah, when we hear someone being moide b'mitzas, in the case of a loan, we suspect that there's a delay tactic, and that he really owes the entire amount, and not just the part that he had admitted. So now, that is background. Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv Sovar, Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv, who said that when a katan puts in the claim, you owe my father 100, and the fellow then concedes or admits, I owe 50, Rabbi Lozer ben Yankiv Sovar, lo shna boy, v'lo shna bevnoi, eino meiz. When a borrower is being collected from, what he says, he makes no distinction between whether it's the father himself, the one who originally lent him the money, or it's this boy, his son, that is coming with the claim. He, the borrower, will not be bold. He wouldn't be bold to deny everything. And therefore, when he admits partial, we're suspect of what we saw above, that it's a delay tactic. The hilkoch lav meshiv avedahu. His partial admission is not the equivalent of a gesture of altruism, of returning a lost article, of volunteering information. Not so. A claim was made, even though it wasn't the lender himself making the claim, but rather it was his son. A person would not be so bold as to deny everything. And therefore his partial admission is viewed as a delay tactic. And therefore we impose a shvua on him. That's Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv's approach. For Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan who exempted from the oath, hold, before of who the Eino may is. In front of the lender himself, in this case the father of this boy who's making the claim, the in his presence, to his face, the borrower would not be so bold as to deny. And therefore, when he admits partial, we're suspect that really he should be admitting everything and that he's simply pulling off a delay tactic. Aval b'fnei b'no, the Rabbanan hold that when it's the son of the lender coming to make the claim, meis, a person, if he wanted to, he would deny everything. He would have no compunctions against total denial. If he was, let us say, if he was a lowlife just trying to get away with having to pay, he would lie, he would deny everything to the to his face, the face of Bino, of the son coming to make the claim. When we delome is, from the fact that you have a son making a claim regarding money owed to his father, and the one being claimed from, the respondent, isn't meis. He doesn't say, I don't owe you anything, but he's moida b'miksas. Meshiv avedahu. He is viewed as no less than returning a lost article. His admission is something that he wasn't forced into, so to speak, by virtue of any chazoka. And therefore, since he's like a meshiv avedah, since he's making an admission under circumstances that he could have just as well denied everything, we say you're exempt from making, from having to swear. So with that, we've explained the machlokis Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Rabbanan, and the case is a katan is making a claim that his father had loaned money. The one being claimed from admits having received, but says, I paid back half. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that is viewed as a possible delay tactic, and therefore you have to swear to back up what you're saying. And according to the Rabbanan, he is telling the absolute truth, because if he wanted to get away with it, he would have just as well denied everything. The Gemara continues. Mi motzis mukmis law karabalozer ben Yaakov. Can we really set up our Mishnah as we explained earlier in accordance with Rabalozer ben Yaakov, namely that a shvua is made because a katan is making the claim? Our Mishnah said nishboyin the katan. And in order to explain that, we said that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. But can that really be? Hakatani Reisha. Back on Lamed Chesamid Beis, the fifth line of the Mishnah, we saw the following. Mono liabo biodcha. Son claims from someone that you owe my father 100. And the one being claimed from responds, Ein lucha biyodi elo chamishim dinar. All I have is 50 dinar, not 100. Potter, mipnei shemeshiv avedahu. We see their exemption, because the partial admission is something that is quite honest. If he wanted to lie, he would have said, I don't know anything. So we view the partial admission as meshiv aveda. And again, it was a case of someone coming to claim money owe to one's father. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov didn't say that. He didn't say he's meshiv aveda. The Gemara says that the Mishnah can be understood according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov as well. Hasam de lo omar bori li. In that case, the Tovea was not coming with a claim of certainty, of clarity. Hacha in the Seifa, where it said nishvoyin lekotan, the Omar Bori Li. There the son is coming with a claim of certainty. And as such, the respondent would never have denied everything. And therefore, as we said, we're suspect of a delay tactic, and therefore we impose a shvua. So the Reisha and the Seifa can be learned in accordance with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Shmuel Omar. The idea of Nishpoin Lekotan, the term of Lekotan in the Mishnah, which said Nishpoin Lekotan, we swear to a Kotan, that is not a case where the Kotan is making a claim, as Rav had explained, but it's a totally different situation. It's Lipora Minichse Kotan. It's when one is trying to collect a debt from Yesoimim, from minors that inherited their father's estate. So when you come to collect from Yesoimim a debt that was owed to you by their father, you nevertheless have to swear. And the Mishnah said, Nishboyin lehektish, that's Lipora minichse hektish. That's someone who's coming along to collect based on what he claims his earlier lien on property, that after he established the lien on the property, the borrower sanctified it. This you can see in the Rashi, Lipora minichse hektish, hamaktish nechosov. A person sanctified his property. The Yotzlav Shtarchov, and there emerged a bill of collection against this fellow, Uboli Pora Minanachosim, and the lender is coming now to collect the debt due to him from these properties that were sanctified. So Tzorach Shvua. He has to swear to the officials of the Beis HaMikdash that he has first claim on the property, and that and hence can take it, but he can't take it from the Hekdish until he swears first. The Gemara continues. You'll notice on the side we have a Nosei, a topic heading, under which we've written Hezber Shel Shmuel of the Kotoni Nishboin the Koton Hekdish. Shmuel's explanation of the Mishnah that says one swears to the minor and to the Hekdish. Hainu Aboli Parim Nichsei Koton Sorchli Shova Aboli Parim Nichsei Hekdish. Adam Shehikdish Nechosav Yosalov Shtarchov. All of this we've already seen. And the double underline that appears in the Gemara represents kushyos, questions. So we continue. Lekotan, Lipora Minichse Kotan. Are you saying then that our Mishnah that says Nishboin Lekotan means someone who comes to collect from the properties of a minor? Well, Tanina, we have already learned this in a different Tanaic source. It says, Minichse Yesoimim lo Yipora elo Peshvua. Tarti Lomali. When one comes to collect from the properties of orphans, he cannot collect unless he takes a Shvua, unless he swears that the money is owed to him. Why do I need two sources telling me the same thing? Ha Komash Malon. The extra source reveals to us Kedabaye Kshisha, in accordance with Abaye Kshisha's teaching. The Tani Abaye Kshisha, Yesoimim Shamru Gedoilim. When the Mishnah says, one who comes to collect from Yesoimim, he cannot collect unless he takes a Shvua, the Yesoimim, the orphans, are in fact adults in age. The Ein Sorch Lomer Kanim, and it goes without saying, if you're coming to collect from actual from orphans that are actually minors, bein l'shvua, bein l'ziburus, whether it be with regard to the need for taking a shvua, the need for swearing before collecting, whether it be regarding the halacha that the properties that you collect in lieu of the debt or in exchange for the debt owed by their father, the quality of the property that you collect from Yesoimim is ziburus quality property. In the Talmud, we describe three different qualities of properties. There's Idis, Beninis, and Ziburis. Ziburis being the lowest quality property, so that if a person is in possession of several different qualities of property, and specifically if you're talking about a Yosam, someone who inherited properties, and he has different quality properties, he parts in payment of his father's debts only from the worst quality property, the ziburis quality property. the two sources then that speak about coming to collect from Yesoimim, one tells me when is referring to the collection from adult Yesoimim, adult orphans, and the other source is telling me about collecting from minor orphans. And as we said, that these two points apply to each one of those scenarios. We continue in the Gemara. Lehegdish, we saw in the Mishnah the halacha of nishboyin lekotan lehegdish. And Shmuel explained, lekotan means when you come to collect from a cotton, and lehegdish means when you come to collect properties that have been sanctified, however you have an earlier claim on the properties. So the Gemara asks again a question very similar to what we saw when we discussed the cotton, the issue of a seeming redundancy. Lehekdish, are you saying that our Mishnah that says Ishboyin Lehekdish is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash fund, which means Lipora Minich Lehekdish, you're swearing in order to collect from properties that had been sanctified when you have a shtar, when you have a bill of collection which predates the sanctification of those properties? Well, Tanina, we've learned that already in a different source. Minachasa mishuabodim lo yifru ela b'shvua. When you come to collect from properties that have been purchased, but the purchase was subsequent to the date in which you had loaned money to the seller of these properties. So the Gemara asks, you see that when you come to collect from Nechosim Mishubodim, those are properties that others have purchased. Literally, they have a lien on them, but in this case it means they've purchased. You, having the earlier claim, are able to collect from them, but if you do so, you have to swear first. Umali Mishubodim Lehedyot, Umali Mishubodim Legavah. What difference does it make whether the properties have been taken over by an individual private person, or the properties have been sanctified and are in the possession of Gavoah, the Beis HaMikdash? So once I have a Mishnah already that says Minichosim Shimon Lo Yifru Ela B'Shvua, what do I need our Mishnah that says that Nishboyin Lehegdish? Itzderich, I need two sources. Sagadai Techamina Hedyot Hu De'odam Oisei Kenunya Al Hedyot. When it comes to commoners, and you are coming to collect from the commoner, from the Hedyot, because you have an earlier bill of collection, there we impose an oath, because we are suspicious that the borrower would say, I still haven't paid up, in other words, I'm still chayev, in order for the lender to seek out the properties that he, the borrower, had already sold to others. And a kenunya is a type of it's an underhanded deal where at the borrower, who may in fact have already paid up his loan, will say that he didn't pay it up, so as to enable the lender to go and seek collection from those properties that were bought by third parties. And the lender and borrower will then split those properties. So there we see the need for a shvua, swear that you still owe the money. And therefore, if a person was trying to practice this subterfuge, he wouldn't do so. Aval hektish, d'ein oda moise kenunya al hektish. When it comes to hektish, if someone had, let us say, had owed money and then subsequently sanctified his properties, when he comes forth and says, I still owe the money, we're not suspect that here you have some kind of kenunya that the borrower is doing to rip off hegdish, to rip off hegdish from the properties that he had sanctified. So this is what we would have thought, that ain oda moise kinin al hegdish kamash malon. Therefore, I need the second source to tell us that when you're dealing with collecting from hegdish as well, you have to swear that you haven't been paid yet. The Gemara asks, "V'omar avhuna shchiv me'ras hegdish kol nechosav." A person in the throes of death that had sanctified all his property. V'omar mona leploni biyadi, and he says, in the throes of death, whilst it is deathly ill, he says, "I owe $100 to so and so." Naaman, he is believed when he says that. Chazaka in oda moise kinunya al hegdish. When he claims, I owe so and so $100, and we're talking about a person that had sanctified all of his properties, with this claim that I still owe so and so $100, that so and so is going to collect the debt from sanctified properties. And we see that Rav Huna says a person doesn't practice subterfuge in order to rip off hegdish. So if that's the case, as we see, we believe the Shchiv Meira. There's no need for any oaths. So this shows us that a person doesn't make a knunya against hegdish. The Mora answers, Amri Hani Mili Shchiv Meira. That's true when you're dealing with a person who's in the throes of death. He's not merely admitting something that's not true. De'ein odom chote velo lo. A person there isn't going to sin unless he has some personal benefit. But he's in the throes of death. So therefore, if he's saying that he still owes the money, and true, the collection is going to be made from sanctified properties, there is no falsehood taking place here. He has nothing to gain. Avogabi bori, when it comes to a healthy person, vadai chayshinon, will certainly choshesh that a person will practice subterfuge even against hektish. And you'll have someone admitting that he still owes money, and the person laying the claim says, I haven't received payment for it, and we will make him swear that he hasn't received payment for it before we'll enable him to collect from hegdish as well. The Mishnah. On the side of the Gemara, as our topic heading, we've simply noted, Dvorim She'en Ishboin Aleihem. There are things that will not generate an oath. Sources for this information will be forthcoming in the Gemara. The Mishnah. V'elu dvorim she'en ishboin aleihem. The following are items, are things that one would not swear over them. Hu'avodim, v'ashtoros, v'akarkois, v'ekdeshes. If a person would claim, you owe me slaves, or you owe me bills of collection, shtoros, documents, or you owe me land, and matters concerning hegdish, items that have been sanctified, and there is then denial or partial admission, there will be no oath. We will not consider the din of moide b'miksas, which generates a shvua, as applying to these examples. Furthermore, ein bohen tashlume kefel, there is no double payment that is characteristic of a theft done surreptitiously, which ordinarily would generate a double payment. Not so in these cases. V'lo tashlume arba v'chamisha, nor the payment, the multiple payment of four or five times the original value, which is the case when an animal, a sheep or an ox of someone is stolen and then subsequently sold or slaughtered. Shomer Chinam Eino Nishba. If someone was entrusted with one of these things to a guard, to a bailey, and he claims that they were either lost or stolen, he wouldn't have to take an oath. No se socher no mishalem. A paid bailey, if the item was lost or stolen, who ordinarily would have to pay, in these cases he wouldn't pay. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Kochim. Rabbi Shimon qualifies when it comes to items sanctified. Shechayev b'achriyuson, if it's a case where a person is duty bound or is obligated to make good if something happens, achriyuson means he has offered a guarantee. For example, a person had said that I accept upon myself to bring a korban, and he then set aside an animal to represent that sacrifice, but the animal was then stolen. That would generate a kefel payment, because the case that we just described was where the individual, the owner, had accepted responsibility. So it's considered like momon, like common owned goods, because you have this responsibility to make good on it. However, v'sheinu chayav b'achriyuson, if you dedicated an animal and you said harei zu lehekdish, you dedicated it, the animal, without taking personal responsibility, and then it's stolen, there would be no kefel payment. Ein, and likewise v'sheinu chayav b'achriyuson, ein nishboin alein. Then, according to Reb Shimon, there would be no shvua generated. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yesh Dvorim Shein Bekarka V'Einom Kekarka. We read it with the word Bekarka with a base. Some Girsos have it Yesh Dvorim Shein Kekarka. There are things that are attached to the ground, but they don't have the halachic status of being Karka. V'Ein Chachomim Moedim Lo. And the sages don't agree with him, with Rabbi Meir. Ketzad, what does Rabbi Meir have in mind? What's the case? Esther Gifanim Tunus Masarti Loch. Someone claims, I gave you 10 laden vines, means vines with clusters of grapes growing on them. Valomer Einon Elo Chomesh. And the one being claimed from says, no, there were only 5. Rabbi Meir Mechayev Shvua V'Chachomim Omrim. Kol Mechubel Karka Reu Kekarka. Rabbi Meir says, you have, in the case we described, a Moide B'Mikzas, and therefore a shvua is generated, even though you're dealing with things attached to the land. And the Chachamim disagree. They say things that are attached to the ground have the status of karka. And as we mentioned before, on previous occasions, ein ishboyin ala karkois. Karka, land, real estate, does not generate the need to swear when, if it were portables, there would be an oath. When we speak about having to swear, as you find in the case of partial admission, that is true only in matters that are measured or have a known weight or a known number. Ketzad, an example. Bayis mole mosarti loch. Someone claims, I gave you a house full of grain. V'kis mole mosarti loch, or a pouch filled with content. V'alo omer, and the respondent says, eini yodea elama sheinachto atonotel. Potter. He says, I don't know, but whatever you left here, you take. That is exempt. That type of response does not create a shvua. However, ze omer ad haziz veze omer ad hachalon chayav. If the man making the claim says, I gave you a house that was filled till the balcony with grain, and the respondent says, it was filled only till the window, which is, let's say, in our example, lower and less than what you're claiming. But there, you defined, and therefore, chayav. Therefore, there is a shvua obligation of based on the motive it makes, the partial admission. But it was the partial admission of something with a known quantity, because the claimer said originally, I gave you something, a house filled, ad as is, until the balcony. It's a well-defined, let's say, demarcation of quantity. And now the Gemara relates to the din of Tashume Kefel, the payment of twice the original value in the case of a theft. So, Tashume Kefel Minolan, from where do we know what the Mishnah taught regarding the cases where Kefel would not be paid? So on what things would one pay Kefel, and on what things would one not pay Kefel? So now we have the source. It says, Al kol dvar pesha, klal. Al shor, klal means that's a general statement. On which basically says, on all matters of sin, of theft. Then it says, Al shor, al chamor, v'al seh, v'al samo. And then the posuk goes on to enumerate specific animals, an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or an article of clothing. That's prat. That is a specific section of the pasuk. The pasuk then goes on to say, Al kol aveda, chozar v'kolal. That's a general statement on any missing item. Klal uprat uklal, when you have a pasuk that has this construction, a general statement, a specific statement, and then again a general statement, you come to conclusions, halachic conclusions, provided with regard to items that are similar to the examples, to the details in the pasuk. Well, when we look at the details in this pasuk, the examples, we saw three different kinds of animals, and we saw an article of clothing. We can say as follows, ma prat mefurush, just like the examples are clearly, are explicitly davar metalta v'gufa mamon, items that are portable and have intrinsic value, av kol davar metalta v'gufa mamon, so too anything that has those characteristics, that's portable and has intrinsic value, and things like that, when stolen, will lead to the kefel payment. The posuk, and that's what the topic of the posuk that we read concerns. So we've established from the construction of the posuk that the kefil payment would be made only for things that are metatil and gufo mama. Yotsu karkois, this it will exclude real estate, shein metatlin, they're not portable. Yotsu avodim, shukshil karkois, will exclude slaves from the kefil payment, in the event that a slave is stolen, because a slave is compared to land. Yotsu shtoros, we exclude bills of collection. Shafapishein metatlin, even though they're portable, ain gufon mamon. They're not intrinsically valuable, they have representative value. You read the shtar, and then you know what you're able to collect. So it's not gufon mamon, it doesn't have intrinsic value. Hekdish, why is Hekdish excluded from Kefel? Re'ehu, ksiv. In the Pasuk, you find the term Re'ehu. And Re'ehu means your fellow man. That's when you have dealings with your fellow man, you steal from him, so then you're Chayav Kefel. But if it's not your fellow man, there is exemption. The Mishnah also said that those items are exempted from v'lo arba v'chamisha. You're not going to pay the four or five times principal value in the event that the animal was slaughtered or was subsequently sold. My taima, why is there no four or five payment? Tashlume Arba Chamisham Rachmana Velo Tashlume Shloishav Arba. When we've already established, as we have done, that there's no kafel payment, when we speak about, let us say, paying four times the value of the animal, if a man had stolen a person's sheep and then slaughtered it, he would have to pay four times the original value. Why? Well, or how do you figure that? Twice its value, that's for the theft. Again, another two times the value, making a total of four times the value, that's because you slaughtered it. However, if there's no kafel that's being paid, as would be the case of a stolen hegdish animal, so if there's no kafel being paid, you don't have that extra a double amount. You pay, of course, the principal, but if you subtract the kafel from it, you're not going to have four times. You'd have only three times the original value. And the Torah does not make any accounting for paying three times or four times the original value. The four, by the way, is a reference to the case of five times original value, but if you subtract the kafel from the five times, you're left with principal plus three times, which is a total of four times the original value. And hence, the Torah makes reference to Arba v'chamisha, not Shloisha v'arba. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.